Okay, let's call this meeting to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of the March 17 meeting.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the, my report is just to say that we are moving ahead on our website, and we've got meetings scheduled in place already. June 12th is the rollout for the community to be able to see what we're working on, and that will be essentially a soft launch of the website, and we'll then be doing a full presentation of it in the first part of August. It'll give us the summer to get a feel for everybody working together, working out any bugs, though we don't expect there to be any. And the specifics of it should be done in the next couple of weeks, and we'll be talking about that at our work session coming up. Is there a vice chair?
Two things. My work with the Lincoln Association has been postponed a bit because of some major activities that they've got going in their area, and they put me on the back burner for a while, and that's fine because we have plenty of time to do it. The other report is that I'm still investigating the possibility of creating some senior multi-service centers, and CDM, is that the right title? Received a nice grant from the state of Washington to build a new facility, and it's going to be a daycare center primarily, but they're interested in making it a multi-service center, so I'm going to be talking with them about that. And I even passed on an idea to him, and he said, "Oh, gee, that's wonderful." He thought, I indicated to him that he might want to create a branch someplace else rather than just having one place. There's several places, and it would be a good way to expand the concept of multi-service centers by having one agency that then is responsible for all of them throughout the county.
Sort of satellites.
Rather than creating
That same grant included a provision for some sort of community center, senior center in Washougal, I think.
That's already there, and they got some extra money to build on that, and part of it's a library, but it's also a community recreation center. There are several senior centers around, but they're more recreational than they are multi-service.
All right.
That's it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Communication report, Marjorie is ill. Treasury report,
we gave the time banking people the who'd write the check to? The
Human Services Council,
$1,000 in the last month, so our bank account is down to $1,889.33 now. And what I'd like to do is in the future, when we know we have a check coming out, is have the commission approve it so that we can just get a check from the bank and deliver it so that we don't need to buy checks or anything like that. And I don't know if there's any checks coming out. There is a few dollars in here that's identified for Urban Green Design, Universal Green Design.
Right, I don't have any requests.
That any expenses are
there's
anticipated. As an example, if there were going to be some monies expended towards that, then we need to have the commission approve it, and then we'd get a check and go.
Okay, thank you. Time banking, Karen?
I have some things to say about time banking, but before I do that, I want to talk for just a few minutes about the weatherization program that's been going on for quite some time here now. We have three neighborhoods that were identified by Clark Public Utilities in partnership with Clark County, in which
letters were sent out several years ago to residents who were offered the ability to make their homes more energy efficient, and there was a cost to the residents that were participating, but the cost was definitely less than if you went out onto the open market to get this work done. So the program for this particular area is just about ready to close at this point, so this is kind of the final report on what was done here. There were, have been a total number of jobs completed to date at 175. There are four jobs that are still in progress, and there are five jobs that have been completed but have not yet been paid for. There were a total of 241 residences that were part of this program. So Clark Public Utilities has applied for another grant. The money for this program comes down from the state in the form of a grant. So a new grant has been applied for, and we're hoping that it will be approved. If so, then there will be another neighborhood chosen to participate in this program. And lastly, in terms of weatherization, I just want to read a couple of short comments that residents that took advantage of this had to say about the program once the work was completed. One of the comments was, a wonderful program that came just at the right time for us. We moved into our house October 2013 and spent the winter freezing all the time. We knew our electric furnace was original to the home. A heating specialist came and did a test and recommended a complete insulation job. When we got the letter about the program, I absolutely jumped at the opportunity. Thank you. Another one says, I used to hear sounds on the roof and outside when the wind blew. I sat under a 100-foot fir tree during that big windstorm. I heard no sounds from outside. I think I'm pretty snug now, thanks to all the additional insulation. The whole process was pretty easy. There were a lot of appointments, but everyone involved was willing to work around my schedule. Thank you all so much for everything. And that's kind of the way all the people feel that have participated in this great program. So we look forward and keep our fingers crossed that Clark Public Utilities will get another grant and we can make additional residences in our wonderful community happy. So that's the final report on the weatherization program at least for this go round. Now on to time banking. We have been talking about and working on a time banking program for almost 3 years now, and we are ready to roll this program out. We have designated 6 or 7 neighborhoods west of I-5 as our beta test area, and those are the areas that we'll be able to join the time bank first. And if there's anyone else in the community that's really interested, we won't turn anyone away, but we want to start small so that if there's any glitches in the software, we can get that all worked out before we turn it loose on the wider community. We have worked with Hi-Fi marketing, digital marketing, and this is what our website is going to look like. Our time banking program is called Our Impact, and we're really, really excited about rolling this out. On April 30th, we're going to be visiting the first neighborhood and doing our first time banking presentation there. And we have several other neighborhoods that we're going to be presenting to in June, and we'll finish up our rollout up to the Bay Area in July. Our hope is that we will roll out to the larger community on, I believe it's January 14th, it's the Martin Luther King Day of Service in 2016. And by that time, there should be no glitches of any kind in the program. And we're excited. So if any of you want to know more about time banking, please contact one of us here on the commission. Do we have any of these in the bag for people to pick up?
Not yet. The website's not live yet.
Okay. All right. By next month, we'll have handouts for you all. So that's the latest and greatest on time banking.
Okay, both the last three reports, the people are out of town, so those won't be happening. The appointments, the COA member appointments for June is something we're going to be handling coming up. Same thing with the nomination of officers will happen next month. So with that said, it's time to have... Greg Nolk, who is from the Healthy Aging, is this on? Healthy Aging Alliance. And we're excited to have Greg with us. There was a fabulous article quoting Greg very liberally in the Reflector last week or so. And if any of you had the opportunity to see that, and the statistics about falls and aging are pretty stunning. So, Greg, you're on.
There you go.
Yes. There you go.
All right. Well, I have a very booming, large voice to begin with. So does this sound okay to everybody?
Yeah.
All right. Well, my name is Greg Holt, and I'm a physical therapist with Home Care Southwest. I've been a physical therapist for about 17 years. I've been doing home care for about the last seven with Southwest. And a lot of the people I see, you could almost say I earn my bread and butter. I pay my mortgage. I pay for my kids' shoes. Because people fall. And a lot of what I do every day significantly has to do with trying to keep people on their feet in their home. And so about a year and a half ago, I got together with Christina, who's sitting in there in the back in the Agency on Aging, and we started what was at that time the Clark County Fall Prevention Coalition. And over the months, it has changed to the Healthy Aging Alliance. Well, I'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. But just a little bit of background on who I am and why I'm standing up here is because I kind of ended up in the lead in trying to help promote a countywide fall prevention program for seniors. So, that being said, what I want to do today with today's presentation is really give you an overview of what fall prevention looks like, the magnitude of it, and what it takes to deal with it at a community-based level. It's a very large issue. It encompasses many sub-factors. And so, what I want to try to show you, we're going to kind of peruse over the top of those. We're not going to get super deep into them. And we're certainly not going to be exhaustive on the issue, because if we were going to do that, we should have been here at about 7 o'clock this morning. This presentation is brand new. If I do happen to burn through things a little bit too quick, you guys are the first people to hear it, so you just let me know, shout out if I'm going too quick or what have you. I'm here for you guys. Okay, so some basic statistics that get tossed around. These are CDC statistics. They get advertised very frequently. And that's meaning that one in three folks over the age of 65 fall within 12 months. So that's a lot. If you're over 80, that ups to one out of every two. If you do simple math based on the last census data, that nationally equates to about 15 million falls a year for everybody that's over the age of 65. From that, the big thing I want you to understand is that falls is the leading cause of traumatic injury and traumatic mortality deaths for people over the age of 65. It is the number one, far and away, and you're going to see that in just a second. So nationally, then, based on the statistics, this is going to be CDC data. What does this relate to? About 2.5 million emergency room visits each year for falls. Which means that On any given day, about every 13 seconds, somebody over the age of 65 is going to be seen in the emergency room because of a fall. Over 700,000 hospitalizations in a year. And within the next 5 years, we're looking at a $55 to $60 billion national health care cost. Deaths, 2013, over 25,000 deaths related to falls. And if you do the math on that, that means about every 20 minutes, somebody over the age of 65 dies from a fall-related injury. The time we're here today, that's going to be, what, 3 or 4 people. So mortality rates. On this slide, what I'm showing you, I pulled some data from Washington State, and I just put it there, these are accidental or traumatic deaths. Suicide, poisoning, suffocation, choking, motor vehicle accidents. Don't get lost in the numbers, just kind of, I want you to take a look at how they relate to each other. Falls isn't in here. I'm going to add that in just a second. Now we've added in falls. You can see the 65 to 74 year old range, falls in the lighter blue, kind of hangs right in there with suicide. Suicide we talked about here not too long ago with Patty Gray and mental health issues. And you can see the exponential climb as we get older, the impact of falls has on our population. That one reaches way up off the screen up to 346, relatively speaking. So like I said, don't get lost in the numbers. Look at the relationship of falls to these other accidental or traumatic deaths. I was at a conference back in the fall, listening to an orthopedic surgeon speak on falls, and he shared these statistics. Basically, the 30-day mortality rate, the estimation that somebody will pass away within 30 days based upon an event. So if somebody falls and has a hip fracture, 9% of those people are estimated to pass away within 30 days. If you add to that person, they have something else wrong with them. Oh, by the way, this is for age 65 and older. They have something else wrong with them, say a neuropathy or diabetes or a heart condition. That increases to 17% of those people will be dead within a month. If you take that same person and now you add congestive heart failure to their list of diagnoses, 65% of those people, if they fall and break a hip, will be dead within 30 days. A huge problem. Clinically, when I go into the home, if I see somebody with congestive heart failure, they have another list of diagnoses, usually an arm's length long. Right? Nobody just has congestive heart failure standing by itself. And those people generally have not great balance. They're the ones that we really have to watch out for. So hospitalization rates, once again, don't get lost in the numbers. I want you just to look at the numbers relative to each other. Look at falls on the right in the red. Look at some of those. Look at the bottom right corner, 4,798 out of 100,000. The next biggest number, not in the falls category on this chart, is 100 in poisoning for people going to the hospital because of self-inflicted wounds. I take that as successful suicide, poisoning, same kind of thing, motor vehicle accidents. Look at how those numbers pale in comparison to the hospitalization rates for people over the age of, we can see how they compare by age range, but for falls. And then once again on that, take a look how exponentially those numbers climb as we get older. If we kind of take the same idea and look at it at a county level, once again, these are all numbers from our State Department of Health. What just happened? Right there. Oh, there we go. I must have said the wrong thing. Let me get reoriented. So Clark County hospitalization rates compared to the state average, and then I just threw some other counties up there. For the 55 to 74 year olds, we tend to be better than the state average here in Clark. But for our 75 and above population, we tend to do not so well. And if we take that trend and we carry it over to county for county mortality rate, here's a chart of that. And what I want you to notice, there's really two things I want you to glean off this chart. The first is that exponential climb of mortality as we get older. And the second is that Clark in the blue and then Spokane in the lighter blue are head and shoulders above some of the other comparable counties. Why? I don't know. But it's something to try to investigate further. So then a little bit more locally still, Clark County. If we go back to the original statistic, one out of every three people fall in 12 months, and look at census data, that would put us roughly about 20,000 falls a year here in our county. Cressa in 2013 serviced a whole lot of phone calls to 911 asking for help with a fall. And then for Peace Health, I got the statistics from I work for Peace Health, I said that. From our hospital. Here's something interesting to note that kind of works into the problem list later, is that through our emergency room, through our hospital admissions, we don't actually track people that specifically because of falls. So if you look here on the right underneath that total column, that's for the citizens, take the first row for example, you have an emergency room admission for somebody that's age 65 or older. So out of the last year, there was over 6,000 of them. Out of that 6,400, 750 of them had a subjective complaint of fall. I fell, that's why I'm here at the emergency room, right? What that might not necessarily account for is the person who fell, broke their hip, they showed up at the emergency room, but I'm here because I have hip pain, not because I mentioned that I had a fall, right? So whatever this data might be, it's incomplete, and whatever picture this might show, the real picture I'm going to assume based on that is going to be larger, but Peace Health doesn't track fall data. And so that's one of the changes that over time we're gonna have to work with the hospital, hopefully with Legacy, to be able to more adequately track fall data. And the last couple statistics, this is from Oregon Health. Oregon, Colorado, New York got $5 million grants to work on pilot fall prevention studies. They're roughly right in the middle of a five-year period to work on those. So just a couple of statistics that really impressed me from Oregon. And that is 60% of those over 65 that are hospitalized for a fall don't go home. They go somewhere else after that hospital stay. And the one that really gets me, earlier we were talking about falls in relationship to other traumatic or accidental events. Here we look at falls in relationship to cancer and heart disease, and Oregon is saying that falls, that the cost associated with the treatment of falls is third behind cancer and heart disease. That's a lot of money. That's a big issue. That's a huge issue that we need to tackle. So I want to just go in briefly about some of the clinical nature of falls just to give you guys a little more perspective on what's happening. With personal risk factors, take a look at those. I think, some of them are pretty obvious. If somebody's sick, has multiple things wrong with them, they tend to not move around as well, obvious. Alcohol, a couple months ago I was treating a gentleman. Both him and his wife had chronic alcohol problems, both of them. They're falling all the time. Oh, no, I'm not. Oh, he's falling all the time. Oh, this, just going on. Just telling how horrible the other person was and how they're falling, getting hurt. But each one of them, I don't have a problem. Oh, no. They're each pointing their finger at each other. It's because you drink too much, right? Oh, no, I don't drink too much. You're the one that's drinking too much. So it's just, it's an amazing thing. A lot of the problems I see with people falling simply they know they have that balance. Their walker's over there, they're over here, or it's too high. I see people walking with their walkers way up here. I see people using their canes to turn on and off light switches. And I say, you know, don't you think that when your therapist is in your room, you might want to be on your best behavior? And so people are doing that behavior when I'm sitting there watching them, and we're talking about falls and safety. What are they doing when I'm not there? It kind of scares me. Mechanical problems, just explain that. That's, you know, I have an arthritic joint. It doesn't move very well. You know, things along those lines. Not placing safety as a priority, apathy. There's a lot of people that I see that know they have a problem with falling, can tell me the things that they need to do, but when it comes down to doing it, they can't really explain why they don't. They do it part-time, they hit and miss, right? But then there's the people, you know, your balance is whack, sir. You have a big problem. I don't care. You know, you've fallen three times since I met you 2 weeks ago. One of these days, your number's going to come up and you're going to get seriously hurt. I fall all the time. I'm not going to get hurt. I don't care. Right? So, that creates an interesting problem. I'm trying to help people. And then, obviously, kind of at the end, so, you know, some people with education, they just simply don't know what to do. I've seen people told them what to do, and they've made amazing changes. Unfortunately, they're more rare than the top two. Environmental risk factors, those go pretty much without much explanation. I think one of the things that I see most common on there is clutter and limited space for mobility. If you think about it, when I'm sitting around walking, I take up just a certain amount of space on the floor. If I add a walker in that mix or a cane, my square footage is now much increased. And so if I'm trying to navigate between my coffee table and my sofa to squeeze myself in there with my big walker with my seat and brakes, it's like trying to steer a shopping cart. There's so much more of me now. And so in limited space, people's clutter, because I don't blame people for wanting to keep their stuff, right? I go to lots of places and people got lots of stuff in their tiny little spaces. But it creates a big problem for a lot of people. Or even in limited space and mobility on top of aging in place, I see people living in older homes where they have a 2 foot wide bathroom door and they can't even get their walker into their bathroom door to get into their bathroom to their toilet. So, the effects of fall on a person, most of those again are pretty obvious. I think the one thing I would like to point out is there in the middle of the relationship between the fear of falling and the decreased overall mobility. It creates a really negative downward spiral. Somebody might fall and then they become a little bit afraid of falling. And so what's a typical response to that? They move around less. They limit their ability, they limit their mobility because they're afraid of falling. So as they limit their mobility, what they discover is, because they're more sedentary, that now their body starts even kind of deteriorating more, right? So then as that happens over time, and then they're up in, and then in the times when they are up, they realize that now they're getting around even worse than they were several months ago, and so they become more afraid. So what do? They limit their mobility even more. And that can just have a severe effect on people to where at some point they just stop walking altogether. And that has significant consequences, you know, medically, because as we move around less, we increase our risk for pneumonia. We increase our risk that our bowels won't work right. And you wonder why those hospitalization rates are so high. I did it again. You know, the computer that I did this on isn't exactly what I wanted to do. So where does the rubber meet the road for fall prevention? Where does it, at a community level, What ends up being the it of it? Regular exercise, medication reviews, annual vision exams, and home safety. Where do these four items come from? Well, let me back up. These four items have become kind of like a gold standard for community-based fall prevention. And where they came from is a handful of years ago, back in 2008, CDC did a whole lot of meta-research, looked at research programs throughout the world with fall prevention programs that has statistically significant results. Say that five times fast. And they distilled the information, and this is what they came out with. And pretty much, if you start looking at community-based fall prevention, everybody's going to have these, at least these components as part of their program. So for exercise, I just wanted to touch on all these really briefly. How are you guys doing? Am I going through this too fast, too slow? Okay? I just have some notes. I want to make sure I hit my main points. So the thing with exercise, I put up four evidence-based exercise programs that are known to produce improved outcomes in terms of falls. One of the key things with all of them, besides being evidence-based, and the common things, is that they have to become progressively more difficult as time goes on. So we just don't want to bring somebody in the door, something very simple, and leave them on that kind of milk level. We want to bring them up to meat and potatoes in terms of exercise. All of them, we try to incorporate balance, strength, some component of aerobics. You should know that, as far as exercise, that weakness, statistically or research speaking, that muscle weakness is the single number one contributor to falls. And so exercise then becomes highly important.
Greg, what's the TAGO and SAIL?
I'm gonna hit those really quick. So Tai Chi for better balance is basically a modified form of Tai Chi. It's simplified, Tai Chi has different forms that they do, and so it's a decreased number of forms and adapted more for seniors. Enhanced fitness is a part of a Christina?
Sure.
It's part of the project Enhance. And they're out of Seattle, correct?
It was organized in Seattle. It's a, like Greg had said, it's an evidence-based class. It's a group exercise class, very social oriented, but it also produces strength training, definitely helps contribute to minimizing or helps prevent fall. There's two classes here in Clark County. There's one over at Battleground Community Center, and there's also one over at Trinity Lutheran. The instructor is absolutely fabulous, and it's one of those classes where you can build up or build down depending on what your skill level is. So whether you're brand new to exercise or whether you're really keyed in and been doing it for a while, it's a great class. So
thank you for letting me put it on the spot. I just kind of stumbled on that one. Otago is actually a home program, and what happens with that is, as a nurse or a physical therapist goes out to the home for a couple times for the first few weeks, they do some training on a home exercise program, and then it's really up to the participant to carry through and continue on in that home exercise program. It's a 12-month program, and then the therapist or the nurse comes back out in the 6th month to kind of review what's going on, and in the other months that they're not out in the home, they make phone calls just to try to help motivate and see how everything's going for the participant. That's actually a program out of, I think it was New Zealand. Anyway, and then so SAIL. SAIL stands for Stay Active and Independent for Life. And this is a exercise-based program, but it has a lot more to it. And so One of the things we know about fall prevention is the idea of fall prevention in and of itself doesn't sell well to the target audience. Older folks don't want to hear about fall prevention, but they do want to hear about what they can do to stay active and stay independent. And so what the sales class does is it teaches and engages participants in the process of fall prevention without expressly necessarily talking about fall prevention. So the idea is to get people thinking and engaged in the elements of fall prevention for the sake of being active and independent, which what it promotes, but the fall prevention and what comes along with that, well, it kind of becomes a coincidental, so to say. But it includes physical activity, it includes balance, aerobics, strengthening, stretching. It's taught by a trained, qualified instructor. It also incorporates education. It gets people reflecting on their exercises. Am I ready to exercise? What can I do to stay motivated to exercise? What kind of strategy can I put together to exercise? It incorporates fitness standards, and it's a really good class. It should be known that it was developed here in our state by the Washington State Department of Health. And they started working on this original research back in 2003, and have just advanced it forward. They offer trainings for instructors, and we have two of them that I know of currently in our county. One's up in Woodland at a Presbyterian church, and the other is being ran at Touchmark down in Fairway Village.
Yeah. Oh, I do it every day.
And so, kind of this is the what to expect in a sales class. 3 times a week exercises for about an hour, kind of covering those basics I said. Qualified instructor. The classes are modifiable. Just like the enhanced fitness that Christina mentioned, it takes into account medical conditions, it takes into account just your physical stamina. If you need to sit down and just do a few things, or if you need to stand up and be more aggressive, each class is tailored towards the individual. And like I said, it's just designed to really help and maintain and improve your balance and stability and your activity and independence. But really marketed as how to keep people engaged with life. So within our dedication reconciliation, this isn't certainly an area of my expertise, but the basic idea when we talk about medication reconciliation is, well, it's built upon the understanding that medications get a lot of people in trouble. Land a lot of people back in the hospital, get a lot of people sick because they're not using it properly, because they're over-medicated, because a provider at Peace Health and a provider at Campus Oncology, for example, don't necessarily have an intercommunication system so that when one does something, the other one knows about it, right? The doctor inside Peace Health can do something and the other doctor inside Peace Health can see it because they're in the same system, but if you're in two different systems, we don't have any communication across those systems. So it's important for people to understand that they need to actively seek out their primary care physicians. They need to actively seek out their pharmacists and say, hey, look at my medication list. What's on it? Do I need to be taking everything on it? Can we reduce anything on here? Right? Review, revise, and reduce. Boom. I see people with medication lists that are 20, 25, sometimes 30 medications long. I've seen people on 5 different blood pressure medications. That's staggering. And they stand up and they get dizzy and we wonder why. Right? So with medication, we want to get those medications reviewed and revised, hopefully reduced. We want folks out in the community to ask questions of their providers. We want them to get educated about the medications and follow the instructions and know what it is they're putting into their bodies. And if they can't, at least family members should be able to do that. So what kind of medications? There's certainly medications that contribute to our fall risk. if you are anxious, if you're depressed, if you have high blood pressure, trouble sleeping, if you need enough to relax for any reason, if you have chronic pain and you're taking any kind of opioid for pain relief, if you have allergies, all those are highly known to increase your risk of falls on their own merits. Hmm. And so, how many people are in our community are taking those types of medications? Mm-hmm. Tons. Mm-hmm. Visual exams. This isn't my area of expertise as well as far as ophthalmology. But as a physical therapist, I can tell you that vision is extremely important to balance. One of the things we always try to do is isolate out vision versus what our body, what our brains are being told by our body, by our muscles, by our joints in terms of balance, where we are, what's going on with our body. And people that say have decreased sensation, things like that, you take away their vision, and they instantly become disheveled and start falling over. Because their body relies so much on their vision that when you take it away, they have nothing left to keep their balance with. And so having our vision checked and being up to date on our prescriptions is very important. Lots of times, I can tell you, I walk into people's homes and their glasses are dirty. They have bifocals. They're actually looking through their bifocals down the floor to figure out where they are, so it already puts it out of focus. Their glasses, because Medicare, if your vision is just changing because of your age, Medicare, if I remember correctly, doesn't fund your glasses. They won't pay for your glasses. So a lot of people might have prescriptions that are several years old and out of date. And so you add that into the fact that you might have beige carpeting and a beige sofa, and on a bright sunny day like we had yesterday in Vancouver, they can't see as well, they're hypersensitive to light, they're looking through their bifocals through dirty glasses, through lenses that are 3 or 4 years old, they're in for a fall, right? Home safety evaluations and modifications. This is kind of as I talked about earlier, the sofa and the coffee table scenario, and the walker, somebody using a walker, or the narrow bathroom door, very important. One of the good things about home safety evaluations is that there's lots of resources around for people to do self-assessments or family members to do assessments on somebody's home. And it can generate a lot of reflection and hopefully some positive changes. But then again, sometimes, even if you have that information, you're not really sure. And so it's always good sometimes to have a professional come in and look at things within the home. For example, probably most people might not put together a fall with a satin bed sheet. I can tell you, there's several people that I've seen, and they tend to be a little bit shorter, and their beds tend to be a little bit higher. It's amazing how many shorter people I see with very high beds, right? So when they get up in the morning, somebody maybe 80 years old, and they start rolling around, and they have their robe on or their polyester pajamas, and they go to sit on their satiny bed sheet, and they pull one leg up to try to start doing something, and they slide right off because there's no friction, right? This has happened several times. I can't understand it. Change your bed. Go find something cotton and frictiony and rough. They go to do that. Problem never happens again just because it created friction. Most people might not think of that on a lay level off the checklist, but that's something like that is good to have a professional in to help find some nuances like that. And obviously with home safety modification, it includes the entire living space, it includes all the rooms in the house, it includes the outdoors. I can't tell you how many people have the Pacific Northwest funk on their decks or on their steps out in front, right? I'm always advising people, if you have a neighbor or a grandson or something, come over and pressure wash this, because you're going to slip out here and get hurt.
I
adaptive equipment versus modification versus organization. We kind of touched on that. Sometimes it's something as simple as getting a grab bar for somebody's bathroom or a bench that they can sit on when they're showering. Sometimes it means that they might need to just rip that bathroom out and make it bigger because there's just no room in there to move around. Sometimes it's just a matter of in that bathroom, you know what, that camper takes up a lot of your space. Why don't you move that out of your bathroom so you can open up your walk space and get your walker in there a little bit better and not have to sit there and climb around it. Or I can't tell you how many hampers are right in front of the toilet against the wall. And there's only about a foot between the hamper and the edge of the toilet. Like, how do you even get in there? I don't know. So going through home safety evaluations, those are examples of kind of different ways that that can take place. And then lastly, there's obviously aging in place, which is a huge part of that. Sometimes, which is all, you know, a lot of planning ahead and home modifications, wider doors, wider hallways are usually good things. No steps. The house that I live in is a two-story with steps all the way up, and I tell my wife, honey, we can't stay here forever. We have to make another move because we can't age in the house that we're in. So, moving towards kind of the last part of our presentation, fall prevention efforts in Washington and Clark County. Once again, this is certainly, I just want to give you guys a little bit of a survey of what's going on. This is certainly not exhaustive, but just to give you a bit of taste. Our Washington State Department of Health has a great resource in fall prevention. They've published things on their website, on the Department of Health. The person who heads that up, Mary Borges, is a fantastic resource. She's working with other coalitions and organizations throughout the state trying to promote their cause and championing fall prevention in their community. There's also a state fall prevention coalition that recently has begun to become kind of a roadshow, and it now on a quarterly basis circulates around the state to engage in different communities. Vancouver was the first one on the road, and we had that back in January. And if you end up going to the Healthy Aging Alliance website, you'll see that I need to upgrade that because that's past. FD Cares. When we first started this a year and a half ago and Mary was down from the Department of Health, I said, Mary, what's the shining penny of the fall prevention programs in Washington State? And she said, hands down, FD Cares. What FD Cares is in a nutshell, it's a non-emergent response structure within the fire departments and the EMS's emergent procedure response structure. So, in other words, most of the calls the fire department goes on these days are medically related. Right? How many, I'm looking out, I don't see any smoke rising from any houses out here, right? But I can tell you there's fire department somewhere out here rolling and they're responding to a medical emergency. Out of those responses, 40% roughly is estimated are non-emergent. So every time a call comes into 911, we're sending highly expensive emergency response teams, 40% of the time or so, out to non-emergent cases. Particularly as it relates to falls, FD Care started out as a fall prevention program. Mrs. Smith, calling 911. Can you come out and pick Mr. Smith up off the floor? He's falling again. Mrs. Smith, this is the third time you called in the last couple weeks. Sure, we'll come out, right? So instead of rolling up in a big truck, FD Cares rolls up in an SUV, right? Help them back up, check them out. If it becomes an emergency, right, emergency response team rolls out. But if it's truly a non-emergent call, then Mr. Smith just needs help getting back up off the floor because he's 280 pounds and Mrs. Smith is 90, right? They can manage it that way. It saves money, it saves time, it saves resources because if a truck is at a non-emergent call, they have to stay there until it's completed. If an emergent call comes in, they're stuck there picking Mr. Smith up off the floor And so they've got to dispatch somebody from a different part of town over to their area because they're tied up with that. So Ethnic Cares, it's grown. They've been down here and shared with us about that program. They're all about helping any municipality or organization within the country start that. They've been to Hawaii, they're working with Boston, several other places. I don't quite remember off the top of my head. But they do that basically free of charge, except for if you're distant from Kent. This is Kent Fire Authority, I don't know if I mentioned that. But if you know, you're a ways away from them, they just ask that you bring them out there and put them up, really come out and do their training with you. They're also collecting data to help demonstrate the effectiveness of this program to insurance companies and other providers to be able to fund it. Because right now, the Kent Fire Department is kind of taking the funding brunt of it, believing in this program to get it started so that eventually they can collect the data and show it to the other people that will have funding to help fund it. And so we've talked to Vancouver Fire in the past about getting Ethnic Cares potentially started here. In the meantime, though, that slide will come up. So something else, so here locally, the Healthy Aging Alliance of Clark County, like I mentioned at the very beginning, we used to be the fall prevention coalition of Clark County. And we've been going for about the last year and a half. The alliance now is basically a collection of professional volunteers from various organizations in our community. It could be assisted living, it could be the Clark County Sheriff's Office, Area Agency on Aging is involved, numerous people, basically all sharing a passion for senior health. And so we come together once a month, and we've been putting together a plan, kind of based back on those four things that I shared clearly: the exercises, medication reconciliation, home safety, on how to advance a simple yet realistic and practical and working fall prevention program for our county. It's slow work. We have no budget. We have no staff. Everybody works full time. I have five kids. You know, I'm supposedly the ringleader of it. I have five kids. I chair the Vancouver Neighborhood Alliance. I do this. I work full, you know. So it's slow. But it's a worthwhile work. And the people that have hung in over the last year and a half, the organizations that have hung in recognize that. So that's just a picture of our fall prevention homepage. With the website, and part of it is education, I'm the one that is building this website so far, and eventually I'd like to turn it into a larger entity, really getting into carrying on our primary calling of fall prevention, but encapsulating that in aging and wellness and including other aspects of that in there, because like I said, fall prevention by itself doesn't sell necessarily well. So we started off last year, we had when we were still at the Clark County Fall Prevention Coalition, we had a health fair based on fall prevention. We had therapists from different home health agencies in our community doing coming together, doing fall screens. We had, there you can see some of the people down the center there, that's the back side of that flyer, that were involved. And handing out information on safety and anything that might be appropriate for any of these things that we've talked about in fall prevention, you know, home safety, medication issues, and so it was a really good event. And we're looking at planning to try to do another event this fall. The first day of fall has nationally become kind of Fall Awareness Day. It's become kind of this catchy thing. And so a lot of communities around the nation, it's prompting the national NCOA. NCOA stands for National Council on Aging, are kind of adopting the first day of fall as Fall Awareness Day. So back to Ethnic Cares, here's something else that's come out of our Fall Prevention Coalition, and that is the work of East County Fire and Rescue, coming together with the Area Agency on Aging, kind of as a FD Cares light, so to say. East County Fire and Rescue goes out, they see there's a problem, say like, you know, Mr. Smith, this is the third time we've been out in the last 2 weeks to pick you up. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, we would like to refer you over to the Area Agency on Aging to the information and assistance line so they can try to connect you with some community resources so that you don't have to keep calling us. So Mr. Smith, we don't have to keep coming out and picking you up off the floor. Can we get an informational release and send that information over to them, and they will call you and have a nice long conversation with you and try to connect you with the right community resources to make your life better and safer. So that's something that's come out. Additionally, you know, for public education piece, here's a rack card that we developed just this past Christmas. It's got the four basic components on the back. Again, once again, on the front, we're trying not necessarily to sell it as fault prevention, but taking our cues from what we know. Invest in your quality of life. Invest in your independence. Invest in you. Make your golden years as golden as you can be, however you want to sum it up. And then in the back, oh, by the way, this is some really important things that you can do to help that happen. Future challenges. I like that picture. Walking in the walker and the shadows running. So with future challenges, obviously back to that one slide I showed from our hospital, tracking and evaluating the work. If we're out there in the community trying to make things happen, but we don't have anybody tracking the numbers, how can we tell if we're making an impact in our community? We can't. So that's something that is going to take a lot of work to try to create those tracking programs. Program funding speaks for itself. Exercise classes. One of the problems we have with our exercise classes, we like the sail class, we like the idea of enhanced fitness. Say for the sail class in particular, nobody reimburses for that. So you can go have an instructor, learn how to be an instructor and be all gung-ho about it, but in reality, particularly say like a class of sale, which is ongoing, it's not for a limited duration. You have somebody that's saying, well, I'll commit to an hour three times a week plus all the work that it takes to set this up and keep it going in the meantime for free. It's not a lot of people that are willing to do that. And so with things like exercise classes and other similar entities, we need to get our healthcare system philosophy and thinking caught up to actual healthcare. And I know this is a common discussion versus pathology management. As long as we're managing pathology, as long as we're managing disease, we're always behind. If we can get on the front edge of it and invest more money nationally, locally, however you want to dice that up, into prevention, then those diseases become less, and we actually save ourselves money. Medication reconciliation, that's something that we're talking about right now in our meetings. We recognize that in our community there's needs with that, and so we're currently trying to contemplate what we can do to improve the medication reconciliation process in our community. That's another huge issue. Medicare and vision, like I said, you know, a lot of folks that are on Medicare trying to tie different things together. Medicare doesn't pay for a lot of preventative things. And so even with vision, like I said, if your vision is just getting old, if your vision is changing just because of your age and it's not because of a medical pathology, and you have Medicare, you're not going to be able to have insurance pay for new glasses, and we all know the glasses are very expensive. And then so, lastly, you know, engagement. Reaching out to providers, primary care physicians, pharmacists, clinics, agencies, letting them know the magnitude of falls and what it costs us in the community. That's very labor intensive. Reaching out to the public, doing what I'm doing right now. This is very labor intensive. Without the funding to be able to hire people maybe to do that, and you get guys like me that got full-time jobs, five kids at home, spring chinook running up the river, and you're like, I want to get out and fish, right? It becomes very difficult. So those are all very significant challenges. But it's hopefully things through commitment of our community and members of our community that over time we'll be able to surmount. I think that's the end. So you guys, thank you for listening to me. And I hope that you learned a little bit about fall prevention and can appreciate the magnitude and the cost that it incurs onto our community. And so I don't know, any questions? Yeah, any questions? The answer is yes, but only on Tuesdays.
I'd like to make a comment. There are several other members of the Commission on Aging that are not here this afternoon. Chuck Fryer, Swan Brayer, and Lisa Rasmussen. The three of us are constantly talking about our concern about sidewalks in this community. We all do want to age in place, and it's important that we do everything we can to make that possible for our senior population. But aging in place becomes not such a great thing when you, at some point, become a prisoner in your home.
Yep.
Because you can't get out or get back in, or if you can get out and get in, your sidewalks are in such a state that it's just not safe to be out there walking with a cane or a walker. So that's a real community awareness issue. We seem not to have money enough to keep up our roads these days, much less sidewalks, but it's an issue we'll continue to talk about, and hopefully at some point be able to address that, because the outside environment has to be safe as well as inside the home.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see this from, it's a huge, I mean, talking about falls, it encompasses so many different areas, and each one of those areas in and of itself is huge, you know. Figuring out how we can get legacy systems and peace health systems communicating on medications, that's a big deal. Personally, I was thinking, because we have the prescription monitoring program here in our state, we already have a database that exists with opioids put in it. You guys know what the prescription monitoring program's for. It's to prevent people from help prevent people from doctor shopping for narcotics, right? And so we already have this system in place that providers can connect with, right? It has something to do with drugs or medication. I've talked to the company back east, the engineers and maintenance is this software in this program. They have it in multiple states. And I said, hey, how hard is it to make a program so when this doctor has this person's medical chart pulled up and he changes something, and the next day some other doctor pulls it up in a different organization or across state lines, pulls it up, they'll instantly see real time the change was made. And the technology's there, it's not hard at all. The problem is just going through all the legal realities of it, particularly since the prescription monitoring program is an act of the legislature of our state. And so to modify that, we have to get the legislature to modify it. So just the impetus of that is challenging. But something along that line, my first thought was, let's add all medications on it. Then my second thought was, well, why don't we take a look at maybe the top 5 to 10 medications that are attributed to rehospitalizations or whatever. How are you going to, you know, divvy it up and just start with those? That way when a physician changes something, everybody else knows about it. So that's the thought on that. So anyway, all that is to say it's a large, complex, no silver bullet no quick fix problem.
Other questions? Anybody? Yeah.
Testing. Here we go. Questions. When you mentioned the health department's role in the activity fall prevention, but what about the Clark County? Do they have a program of any sort of Clark County health department?
There is no fall prevention program. Last fall prevention program that was local that I could track down was a joint effort between, you know, it was the Vancouver Fire and, do you remember off the top of your head?
It was a part of it, and I can't remember who the other partners were.
I think it was Southwest.
The medical center?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Clark County Public Health, while it doesn't have a fall prevention program, it has cornerstones of a good program. So, for example, they don't do the full range, but they do host the Tai Chi classes at the mall.
Right.
So that's an element of fall prevention. So really kind of what Greg's goal here is you can bring together all the resources under one umbrella, that would be much more effective than I have my program that I'm doing, public health has their program that they're doing, just do an inventory of the pool, all the others would be more effective. So they have elements of it, just not comprehensive.
Right. Did you have the second question?
Well, I was wondering about, in terms of medication monitoring, what role the pharmacy profession plays in this medication monitoring? Is there any role for them? Or is there any organization that can reach into?
Yes. I mean, pharmacists, the answer is yes. Not being a pharmacist and being, you know, head deep into that reality, I can't really speak to specifics, but the pharmacists do have a big role to play. To the degree of how effective they are in that, I think really then you have to begin to look at organizational things, because your pharmacist is part of CVS, right? Your pharmacist is part of Fred Meyer's or part of Walmart, so it's to the effect that there's the philosophy of doing medication reviews within the organization and spending resources and money on that, allowing, you know, highly paid pharmacists to spend that time. Because one of the drawbacks of medication reconciliation that I can tell you from having to do them in people's homes is that it's very time consuming. And so you have, how much time does your doctor spend with you? Hours, sit there and pick that couple of corn dogs while you're there with them, right? No. Right. Medication reviews are very time consuming, both for pharmacists and for doctors. And so to look at those, you're talking a large investment of money from an organization into that professional's time to be able to do that. And so it's much more than just talk, you know. To happen on an ongoing basis, it's much more than just any one individual just taking action. You really have to approach it from an organizational perspective to get any specific organization to have a constant philosophy and practice of allowing their healthcare professionals to do that.
So there are pharmacists out there that will do that medication reconciliation, but they can only do that as well as we provide them.
That's true.
So if I buy most of my meds at Fred Meyer, but oh yeah, I do a mail order for one of them because it's much less expensive that way, the pharmacist doesn't know that I do that mail order. They don't know I take a certain supplement or I take an over-the-counter aspirin or something like that. That's where we can kind of get into trouble. So when you are accessing, that's a great idea when you go to your pharmacist. You gotta remember to tell them about their over-the-counters, about their vitamin supplements, and anything that you're getting outside of that. So they can really give you a good analysis.
Or if you're, say, you're even, like in the case of cancer treatment, a lot of the cancer medications are in the doctor's office. They're very custom tailored. They can be custom mixed. The pharmacist is necessarily going to know about it. Any other questions?
They probably don't have a local professional association that they relate to each other.
They don't. There isn't. There isn't a unifying, binding system in place for everything to relate to itself.
They could have quite an educational role.
Yeah. They're key.
You know, I noticed when we moved into the Kaiser system, it does all that. I'm not here to stump for them, but right. Everything is in one place, so everybody knows what everybody knows. And boy, oh boy, does that ever simplify it? Just inside their system. But you're doing everything inside their system.
Right, right.
So everybody that sees you pulls up the same information, and it's very, very helpful. Other questions? Greg, we really appreciate your coming. We really, really appreciate what you're doing. Molly, to have your investment of all this time and energy that you've got left over from those five kids. We're blessed as a community. Any other things that anybody has that you wanted to bring up or ask of the commission today? All right. Well, if not, this meeting is adjourned. Assessment forms of what? We can link anything to it. Write down the questions, and when Andre, go talk to Andre about it. He can tell you exactly what they can do. Well, you'd have to. What has to happen is we probably have to have a one of our things would be assessments, and then you could take any of those things.
Right.
Exactly, one of those categories. Yeah. That's a great idea. There are some really good ones out there that you can do electronically and get back an analysis. Good grief. What do you mean I'm going to die tomorrow? Not that bad. Yeah. Good to see you, John.